This is the podcast for JNS Spine. Welcome to the December 16th podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery Spine. I'm Natalie Pinchem. I will be reading synopses of articles on the lumbar, cervical, and thoracic spine. Three-dimensional measurement of growth of ossification of the posterior longitudinal ligament. A clinical article by Takahito Fujimori and colleagues. Ossification of the posterior longitudinal ligament, or OPLL, is a progressive disease that causes cervical myelopathy. Because two-dimensional evaluation of ossification growth with plain lateral radiographs has limitations, the authors developed a unique technique to measure ossification progression and volume increase by using multi-detector CT scanning. The authors used serial thin slice volume data obtained by multi-detector CT scanning in 5 patients. The mean patient age was 63 years, and the mean follow-up duration was 3 years. First, a three-dimensional model of OPLL was semi-automatically segmented at a specific threshold. Then, a preoperative model of OPLL was superimposed on a postoperative model using voxel-based registration of the vertebral bodies. Progression and volume increase were measured using a digital viewer that was developed by the authors. Progression was visualized using a color-coded contour on the surface of the OPLL model. All patients had progression of 0.5 millimeters or greater. The mean values concerning OPLL growth were as follows. Maximum progression length, 4.7 millimeters. Progression rate, 1.5 millimeters per year. Volume increase, 1,622 millimeters cubed. Volume expansion rate, 37%. Volume increase rate, 484 millimeters cubed per year. The accuracy of superimposition by voxel-based registration, defined as closeness to the true value, was less than 0.31 millimeters. For intra-observer reproducibility of the volume measurement, the mean intra-class correlation coefficient was 0.987. The root mean square error 16 millimeters cubed, and coefficient of variation was 1.7%. The authors conclude that ossification of the posterior longitudinal ligament progresses even after surgery. Three-dimensional evaluation with the aid of CT scans is a useful and reliable method for assessing that growth. Bone morphogenetic protein-induced inflammatory cyst formation after lumbar fusion causing nerve root compression. A case report by Osama Choudhury and co-authors. Bone morphogenetic proteins, or BMPs, are a group of osteoinductive agents used in spinal procedures for the promotion of fusion. An increased number of complications have been attributed to BMP. They raise important concerns regarding its safety profile. Commonly reported complications include ectopic bony formation, adjacent level fusion, radiculitis, and vertebral osteolysis. In this report, the authors describe the formation of an inflammatory cyst around the BMP sponge after a lumbar fusion, resulting in compressive lumbar radiculopathy. A 70-year-old woman presented with left L4 and L5 radiculopathy caused by a grade 1 spondylolisthesis with a left herniated disc at the L4 to 5 level. She underwent a minimally invasive transforaminal lumbar interbody fusion with BMP packed into an interbody cage at this level. Postoperatively, her neurological symptoms resolved. 6 weeks later, the patient developed a recurrence of her radiculopathy. Radiographic imaging demonstrated an intraspinal cyst at the L4 to 5 level. Re-exploration of the fusion was performed, and a cyst arising from the posterior aspect of the cage was found compressing the axilla of the left L4 nerve root and the shoulder of the L5 nerve root. A BMP sponge was found within the cyst, and the cyst wall was excised to decompress the nerve roots. Histopathological analysis of the cyst wall confirmed the diagnosis of an inflammatory fibroblastic cyst. The authors believe that the formation of the cyst was directly related to BMP's potent ability to induce inflammation. The authors emphasize that spine surgeons should be aware of this complication, in addition to other reported BMP-related complications. Minimally invasive lateral approach for symptomatic thoracic disc herniation. Initial multicenter clinical experience. A clinical article by Juan Santiago Uribe and co-workers. In this series, 60 patients at 5 institutions were treated using a mini-open lateral approach for thoracic disc herniation. This approach involves a 3 to 5 centimeter incision 90 degrees off midline, followed by either a transpleural or retropleural approach for exposure of the lateral disc space. After pedicle resection, if necessary, a broad exposure is achieved to perform a wedge osteotomy for removal of the herniated thoracic disc and placement of an interbody cage if required due to pathology or instability. Preoperative myelopathy was present in 70% of the patients, radiculopathy in 52%, back pain in 72%, and bladder and/or bowel dysfunction in 25%. The median operative time was 182 minutes, estimated blood loss 290 milliliters, and median hospital stay was 5 days. 4 major complications occurred, 1 case each of pneumonia, postoperative chest tube placement, new transient lower extremity weakness, and infection in the posterior instrumentation. During a mean follow-up of 11 months, back pain improved by 30%, and excellent or good outcomes were achieved in 80% of patients, according to a modified Prolo score. Myelopathy improved in 83% of cases, radiculopathy in 87%, back pain in 92%, and bladder and/or bowel dysfunction in 88% of cases. The authors state that this approach represents a middle ground between the high morbidity of an open thoracotomy and the difficulties common to endoscopic approaches. Vertebral body split fracture after a single level cervical total disc replacement. A case report by Tsung-Si Tu and colleagues. Several prospective, randomized, and controlled clinical trials have demonstrated that the outcomes of cervical total disc replacement are similar to those of anterior cervical discectomy and fusion in patients with single-level degenerative disc disease refractory to medical treatment at more than 2 years of follow-up. The authors report the case of a 67-year-old, non-smoking male patient who underwent single-level ProDisc-C cervical total disc replacement at the C5 to C6 level. His symptoms improved after the operation, but on the third postoperative day, a radiograph demonstrated a vertical split fracture of C5. There were no signs of instability at the related spinal segment. The authors opted to manage the fracture conservatively with a neck collar and teriparatide, rather than undertake an ACDF operation. 2 years after the total disc replacement procedure, a CT scan demonstrated stable device position and fusion of the split fracture. Flexion and extension radiographs documented preservation of range of motion. This is the first report of such a complication in single-level cervical total disc replacement. Although the linear fracture caused no neurological symptoms or device migration, the authors advocate prudence in selection and implantation of keel design prostheses. Thank you for listening. JNSPG podcast content is now contained in the newly launched American Association of Neurological Surgeons iTunes U site. Sign up in iTunes for our podcasts and additional content, including video content and podcasts from the AANS, all updated continuously. To read all the articles published by the Journal of Neurosurgery this week, or to listen to more podcasts, please visit us at thejns.org. You can also follow the JNS on Twitter.